I'm Aaron Schachter, in for Marco Werman, and this is The World. President Obama defended the Iran nuclear deal today at a veterans conference in Pittsburgh. He told the vets that the deal is a smarter alternative to putting more American lives on the line in another Middle East war. But Obama also acknowledged one of the big unresolved issues with Tehran, the arbitrary detention of several U.S. citizens by Iranian authorities. The president vowed to keep pressing for their release. Some of the nuclear deal's critics point to other unresolved issues, like Iran's support for militant groups. That's one of the problems Saudi Arabia has with any deal with Tehran. My colleague at the BBC, Kim Gattas, has a piece in Foreign Policy on the escalating tensions between Iran and the Saudi kingdom. Kim, why can't Iran and Saudi Arabia get along?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask them in a way, but you know, it's a combination of rivalry for power and leadership of the Muslim world, not just a theological difference, also about power. And so when you combine those two, you have a proxy war, a cold war between those two large and powerful players in the Middle East.
You know, one thing that struck me about the article you wrote in Foreign Policy is how you described the moment that, quote, unleashed Iranian power across the region. That moment, of course, was when the U.S. removed Saddam Hussein from power. Do you think the U.S. knew that was a possibility? And how did that change everything?
Well, it's always difficult to predict exactly how messing with the status quo is going to change the geopolitics of a region. So when the U.S. decided to invade Iraq for the reasons that it did at the time, there were warnings about the fact that this would indirectly, or perhaps even very directly, eventually empower Iran. But many warnings about that war were ignored by decision makers in Washington. And the removal of the Sunni strongmen in Baghdad did mean that Shias in Iraq felt that they could finally take their real place in the country. And that, of course, brought in Iran, because Iran had been supporting and hosting, in some cases, a lot of the Iraqi Shia opposition.
You talk about this power struggle between Iran and Saudi Arabia, between Shiite Islam and Sunni Islam. And in many ways, it just ends up kind of shockingly petty. There was a great little anecdote you told about the Mecca carpet spat. Tell us about that.
The Mecca carpet spat is a panicked missive from the Tehran embassy to Riyadh, saying that an Iranian company has put in a bid to weave a specially designed long carpet for the two holy sites of Islam in Saudi Arabia, in Mecca and Medina. And the recommendation from the embassy is that the ministry should reject that offer, because this is not just a commercial endeavor by the Iranians, but it is also a way for them to get a foothold in those two holy sites of Islam.
Now, is there really a problem with Iran making a carpet? I mean, are they going to weave in listening devices or cameras? What's the big deal about a carpet, really?
Well, there are a lot of sensitivities between those two countries. There's a lot of mistrust. There's a lot of antipathy. There's a lot of concern about what the other might be up to. When you think that the Iranians stand accused by many Gulf countries of fomenting dissent within their countries, within the Shia communities, whether it's in the eastern province in Saudi Arabia or in Bahrain, it goes both ways. And so every action by every one of those players is scrutinized by the opponent, by their rival. And that leads to a never-ending cycle of distrust, which is becoming increasingly harder to break. Because a lot of the players that the two sides also encourage, or the narrative that they feed about sectarianism, takes on a life of its own, that the two main players, Iran and Saudi Arabia, don't really control anymore. That's the real danger.
My BBC colleague, Kim Gattas.